Hello, everyone. Good to see you. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are delighted to be able to have our first Thursday satsang, or meditation gathering. This is September 7th. Wow. 2023. Months and years are going by. Tomorrow is September 8th, which is my beloved brother Ed's birthday. So he's down in Ecuador and has been down there for about 30 years, I think, with a healing center. So I'll be calling him tomorrow. He's doing well, and his wife and their little daughter, who's now in college, or actually graduated already. But if you have any questions or comments, you can press star 6 on your phone or go down at the bottom of the screen. I think there's a place where you can click on reactions and raise your hand, or just unmute yourself. That's fine, too. So this is the second to last time we'll have our meditation here at our Karuna Home Temple in Northern California, because we'll be going on the road for about the 1st of November in our little microvan, and we'll be, I don't know how we'll figure it out somehow after that. But it's a luxury. I'm sitting at this wonderful grand piano. We call him Yuma. You know, we got him in San Jose years ago, brand new. And delighted to be able to do this together. So the format is that we'll start now with a meditation, and then we'll open it up for any comments or questions anyone has. This is not so much a forum for political discussion or animal rights, vegan. I mean, we can get into some, but that's more for our third Thursday group. This is more focusing on our spiritual lives and any issues we're having or questions we have around that and our interconnection. So everything, of course, is connected. As Gandhi said, someone who says politics is not spiritual doesn't understand politics or spirituality. So it is all connected, but we're going to try to focus more on the spiritual. All right, so we'll go ahead and get started. Feel free to, however you like, leave your cameras on or turn them off or whatever for the meditation. But it's better to be muted for the meditation would be good. All right, so here we go. Go ahead and get started here. Savoring another breath, how life goes on. This precious gift of a human life. Exhalation. We let go. Letting go of everything that is no longer serving us. Letting go of all of our preconceptions, ideologies, fears, letting go, there's no greater wisdom than the wisdom of letting go. Go of anything that may be limiting us. We also radiate our love into the world. Beauty surrounding us everywhere, the beauty of the universe, stars, the moon and the sun, the clouds, the trees and the forest, the grass, the flowers, the oceans and rivers, jungles and galaxies, the animals, the beautiful dogs and cats in our lives, and horses, and all the infinite variety of living beings. Especially we give thanks for the beautiful expressions of life that are suffering in human hands, for food and for research, for entertainment. Beauty. Blessing to all living beings. system. And for all the nature spirits. All the non-visible beings. nation. We're here to contribute our unique gifts, to work together and cooperate. We're here to rescue the animals, to rescue our world, to rescue our own consciousness from delusion. Home. nature of our particular life in this incarnation. Thank you everyone for your participation in our meditation. That is an F. You know, F is one of my favorite keys. I used to only play an F for quite a while. When I heard, you know, there's these systems of correspondence between the seven colors, the seven tones of the scale, the seven chakras, the seven planets, and F was always the one. You know, F is the one. It's in the middle. It's the heart chakra. It's the earth, and and it's green. All my favorite things. So so I love F. But really, you know, I think they're all beautiful. I mean, C, you know, A, whatever. I mean, they're... So anyway, there's systems of vibratory resonance that the Pythagoreans and other esoteric systems have been created over the centuries, and people have studied this in depth. But I think there's probably a lot of truth to it, in the sense that we know we are vibrational beings, and even scientists figured that out, you know. the vibration, you know, the different levels of vibration, from the subatomic, molecular, to all the different systems in our body, and we have monthly and daily and breathing and heartbeat and all kinds of rhythms, the rhythm of our lifetime, the seasons of our lives, and so forth, and all these different vibratory interactions are connected to the earth, you know, and we're connected with each other. We don't realize it, I think. So, you know, we kind of feel like we're separate. And I think that's part of the reality of living in our modern world, is that the technology that we love so much, you know, we just love technology. We just love it. I mean, we can't live without it. You know, but this technology, it really, in many ways, it just disconnects us from nature and from our true nature. So we're always comfortable, but then at a deeper level, we're always uncomfortable. And I think that's the great irony of technology. It makes us comfortable, but on our true nature, we don't know who we are, and we don't know what our purpose is, and we're being told all the time, don't worry, just buy more and you'll be happy. Get more gadgets and have more security. That's what we really need, more security. And we have technology to increase our security so that we are the most secure in our prisons than we've ever been. The animals bear the full fury of this whole thing. You can ask the animals how technology has worked for them. That's a good reflection, you know, because technology has done nothing but made them more enslaved over the years and more hideously harmed. So if we want to have a future, if we want to have our positive future through technology, we can look at the cows and pigs and chickens and see how their future looks like through technology. It's a total dead end. I mean, we should completely forget the idea that technology is going to somehow save us and give us a positive future. Completely, like, forget that. It's never going to happen. We need to. It's only going to come when we reconnect with nature and get uncomfortable. No, if it's hot or cold outside, you know. don't just set a thermostat all the time and not know what the heck's going on. So anyway, we have some notes here. Thank you, everyone, for your kind messages. I see a few things there. All right, so does anyone have a comment or question about anything that came up so far on our meditation time together? See, we're about halfway. We always end this, for those of you who are not old-timers, at we don't go more than an hour. So 1 hour is the maximum, but we usually do use up the whole hour because we just can't stop before. But Madeline is right here. She's the Swiss with the food, and so we're going to stop right at 6 o'clock our time. Yes, Gino, you have
something
to say. Hi. Good to see you.
So good to see you. I just want to say it's been quite a while since I've been to one of your meditations, and sadly, I probably should have been to some more, because my experience this evening was, wait a minute, I never hear meditations that are talking about the earth, the humans, and the animals, and everything. I never hear that. It's mostly like, go deeper, all these different approaches, but they never mention the animals, ever. So thank you.
Well, that's my my honor. Thanks for hearing it. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, the animals, I think, obviously, that's the big problem in our culture, from my point of view, is we don't want to think about what we're doing to them. We want to leave them out of our meditations, and we don't get anywhere, unfortunately, when we do that. So thank you, everyone, for not leaving when I started mentioning the animals. Anyone else have any thoughts or questions? I mean, otherwise, I have a few things I could talk about. Also, there's people who join us who never are here, right? They very very in a very committed way. They listen to the recordings, so we always record these. And so one of our friends who does that asked me if I could talk a little bit about something I really don't want to talk about, actually, but I'll do my best, about grace, the word grace, you know. So, because I think, you know, we think, we look at certain people and we think, gosh, you know, they just have something about them. Their lives are just filled with grace. I wish my life was more like that, you know. You know, like there's this capacity that we have, perhaps, to sort of align ourselves with the cosmic rhythms and move through our life with a sense of ease and joy, and also be blessing others. And how does that work? How does that happen? And to me, it's a little bit like trying to explain a joke or something, or trying to explain what it is to be humble or patient, you know, all those things that it just, you got to grow into it, you know. But I think one of the keys is in the saying by Jesus that I think is so beautiful, really, when you think about it. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, and all things shall be added unto you. Now, that saying to me is foundational for all of us. I mean, for me, and I think it should be for us as vegans, because if we're not going after seeking first the kingdom, whatever we, kingdom of God, kingdom of heaven, the spiritual awakening or healing, or however you want to look at it, to really improve ourselves or to reconnect or reclaim our true nature, and to free ourselves from delusion and from the way we act that's harming others and so forth. That, if we make that number one, make that the most important thing, then it's like other things go better. Now, I remember when Ed, my brother Ed, and I, you know, you know the story. We left home right after I graduated from college, and we were walking. And we had a little bit of money, actually, but we hid it away. Like, we had these backpacks, and this was 1975, and I was 22, he was 20, and we walked to Buffalo from Concord, Massachusetts. Then we were walking south. So we did this long walk from Buffalo all the way down through upstate New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, to Alabama. And we had no money. At one point, we had some money. We had 50, we had two, he had a $50 bill and I had a $50 bill hidden away in our pack so nobody could find it. And we tried to forget about it. But then at one point, we thought we should just give these away, because we don't want to use money, you know, heck with money. So we were trying to think of a good way to do it, and then we couldn't think of a good way, and then we could give it to, I wanted to give it to somebody, but my brother, he said, no, it's not going to help anybody. You can't help anybody with money. You know, the only thing that's going to help anybody is if we wake up spiritually. So we took our two $50 bills, I'll never forget it, and we were in a church, and we went into the bathroom, and we flushed it down a toilet. I remember we looked at each other like, I can't believe we're doing this. Get ready, you know. But anyway, so then we went on with really nothing. Now we had nothing, you know. And it was so great to have nothing. But our mantra in a way was seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, because what we found was if we just focused on that, it was like somehow by some miracle food appeared, a place to stay appeared, you know, it happened, you know, it just, because we didn't worry about it. We thought we have to go for the highest thing, go for the most important thing, and everything will take care of itself. And I think, you know, we're taught the opposite of that in our society. We're always taught that we have to manipulate other people and try to get them to do what we want and so forth. And I'm not saying to be, obviously, to be irresponsible, but to actually just understand that this universe is benevolent. And we're here really to unfold the beauty and abundance of our life and of all life. And yet we're born into a completely opposite brainwashing. From the time we're little kids, there's not enough to go around. You have to compete, and then you're not good, you're nasty, you're bad, and then we get whacked and we get abused, all kinds of things. I mean, we put on armor, we try to protect ourselves. And so the whole thing really is to just learn to let go of the conditioning. And that's why meditation is so important, I think, because without a regular practice of doing the best we can to bring our mind into the present moment and not think. Thinking is an old saying by Joe Miller. If you know Joe Miller, he used to lead these walks in Golden Gate Park back in the 1980s and 90s. I used to go on them. He said, you get more stinking from thinking than you do from drinking. Which I thought was a great saying. Because it's really hard not to think. And our thinking is very often not that healthy. And so to be able to at least, either one of two things, either relax our mind so that we're more in the silence, and if thoughts come up, you know, letting them go. And then also to really not allow ourselves to dwell on negative thinking, right? I mean, like thoughts that are critical of other people or critical of ourselves or based on fear. And to instead really reconnect with the fundamental truths that we're here for just a few short decades. It goes by quickly, and it's precious because it's temporary. It's really temporary. And so we don't, and that what we are is not the body. I think that's the main teaching we get hammered with from the time we're born is that we're this body, this thing, this object, a piece of matter. And we have to protect it and make it a good impression with it and all these things. So when we realize that we're the light that makes this body possible, we're not the body. The body's going to go. It's like a set of clothes, right, or a vehicle, your car. You know, that's not you. That's not us. So then when we understand that, then we're not so easily manipulated by fear. And so I think that's one of the reasons. And then, but the underlying thing is that it's a benevolent universe. Like we are not taught that. We're taught that it's almost the opposite. And that's, I think, a main reason for that is animal agriculture, because we're born into a society that has this huge shadow. Like we're slaughtering millions of animals every day in the background, and then we're smiling and pretending like everything's fine. And so we know we're violent. And merciless, and we're eating that, right? We're eating it every day. I mean, everybody's eating it. So I think the foundation, first of all, is to free ourselves from that. But that's not enough. Then we need to keep going and free ourselves of the whole. That's like 5% of it. You know, the other 95% is all the wounding and the narratives that most of us, even as vegans, still buy into. And that's the real work. That's why meditation is so important. So I think grace is really this understanding that we're infinite consciousness. We're not this body. We're here to basically bless others in our unique way as best we can for the short time we're here. We're definitely not here to accumulate anything or to impress anyone. And really the most important thing is to discover what we are, actually. You know, that's the Because that, the more we do that, the more we see that we're not this fundamentally separate self that is condemned to only have happiness when it gets what it wants. You know, that's the thing. Because as long as that as I'm in that delusion of being the separate self, that I want to get a friend, I want to keep away those bad people, and I want to get more money, and I want to keep away that disease, and I need to take, and that's called samsara, which means suffering that will never end in this lifetime or the next or the next. And really understand that we have a lot more than just this lifetime. I mean, telling people that there's only one lifetime, if you want to make slaves, I mean, everything, all the underlying teachings in our society are for slaves. It's all for slaves. I mean, the idea, you know, whatever it is, like the idea there's only one lifetime, or the idea that we're just this body, or the idea that, like the Big Bang, there was this Big Bang, and then, you know, everything happened. I mean, this materialism, these are all philosophies for slaves. So we have to get to the point where we see through all that. You know, we're not taken in by it. And in a way, that creates, for many of us, a crisis of some kind, right? I mean, we're not going along with everybody, so we're different. That can be hard. So people don't understand us, and they think we're not living the way we should be, and so forth. But I think underlying all of that is we understand, you know, anyone on a spiritual path is not going to be just going along with society. So I think really the underlying idea with cultivating a relationship with what we could call grace is that effort to find out what we actually are. And then what goes along with that, I think, really, the only way we make any progress is through love, loving kindness for others, especially those who are vulnerable. Because as soon as we start manipulating and using and harming others for our own benefit, we go right into the opposite of grace. Really, it's like have you heard of Goethe's play Faust? You know, Faust was this guy. He was a nice guy, but he just wanted to know. He wanted to know everything, and so he made a deal with Mephistopheles, who's basically the devil. And he said, "Sure, yeah, I'll let you. You can know everything, but you gotta kind of go along with what I want you to do." And so his life gets worse and worse, you know, because so it's called the Faustian bargain. You know, we want something, and so we're willing to harm others or to do something we shouldn't do, really. I mean, from the point of view of there's one life living through all of us to get it. And yet we're taught to do that in our society. So our whole society is based on this. When we do it, you know, basically the ends justify the means. It's okay, we kill chickens and pigs because we need the protein. Or we need the milk. We need, you know, like it's okay to do harm because we need, you know, we have this reason. That's right there we have to start questioning. So I'll just say those things. Let me see if there's a few. There's too many comments. I can't read them all. Does anyone else have a comment or question about anything we have? Yeah, we have about 10 more.
Oh,
so. Yeah, Susan.
Will. Yeah, Will. Oh, this has been so beautiful today, and you know, just encapsulates so much. But last time you talked about. Although I missed the meditation, but you mentioned the Big Bang thing. And you know, I was just writing it down. I wrote a comment saying, I don't understand about the Big Bang, but is that because you're saying the Big Bang is a bunch of, BS because everything was already always here. So it wasn't some Big Bang that started everything.
Well, no, I mean, the reason I'm saying it is, that it's pure materialism, right? I mean, the idea is that, I love what Terence McKenna said. He said, you know, if you give a scientist one miracle, you know, then they'll take it from there, right? You know, got to give them this miracle, like there was a big bang, you know, like, all right, so what caused that? You know, they have no idea. I mean, but anyway, but then they have this idea, okay, there was this big bang. It was a totally material thing, like it was a bang, like some kind of a bang, big bang. And so that created the universe, right? It sent all these gases out, and then from there, it's all complete random. Everything is random, like from that. So then these clouds started bumping against each other, and then they cooled down. Then they made, you know, hydrogen, and then helium, and then more complex. They just sort of randomly banging into each other, made some other random molecules, oxygen, carbon. And they kind of randomly banged into each other, and they made some very primitive sort of molecules, amino acids, and they banged into each other, and pretty soon you had some little organisms, some little cells, you know, and then they banged into each other some more, and then you had some fish, and then they banged in, and then you had some humans. It just kind of happened by accident, you know. It's just natural selection and a bunch of random things, and that's how we have life. I mean, it's like that anyone could actually, they teach this in school, that anyone could actually be so unbelievably like what's the word? I mean, to believe that, to say that with a straight face. But that's basically the cosmology of our entire culture that we base on. I mean, it's a philosophy for slaves. If you want to have people who have no meaning in life, they just are consumed. Because if that's what you believe, then everything's meaningless. So what are we? Might as well just compete and fight with each other and get what we can, and then we die, and then it's over. It's all meaningless, empty. But what's taken over. And so that's what you get after 10,000 years of animal agriculture. You have people that are so dumbed down from turning animals into selling them by the pound for 10,000 years, you get that kind of stupidity, which is considered science, like the highest thing, you know, like the great, and you have people getting PhDs in this, right? Like they're really an honored and I mean, it's like, it's so tragic, I guess is the word. It's so tragic that we're just impoverished. We're so impoverished in our nation that we think that way. But anyway.
Oh, what happened?
Is somebody talking? Is that you, Susan?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, probably. I'll mute myself.
Okay. Judy, go ahead. Good to see you.
Yeah. Hi, Will. Hi, everybody. I was just kind of on going back a little bit on what you were talking about earlier about how important our spiritual life is, and to stay focused on the grace, or, you know, however you want to talk about it, the kingdom of heaven, or whatever works for you, but that is the focus that we're all working on. But what kind of, and you also mentioned how that kind of sets us apart, and there's a lot of people who are like, how can you live like that? You know, you're supposed to be out here working, making tons of money. But so that sets us apart, and then what sets us apart even further is our vegan values. And as you've mentioned before, there's so many spiritual teachers who don't mention animals at all in their belief system. And so they have these great teachings, but they leave that completely out. And so we're kind of a small group, let's say, spiritual seekers who also are vegan in the great sense of the word. And I think that what you help so much is to put those two things together, because when, as vegans, we're dealing with a lot of grief, a lot of news that keeps dragging our attention towards evil and horrible things that are happening to animals, but to be able to keep our minds on God, on the heavens, or however, you know, it works for you to talk about it, is the key, I believe. And I think you really help us do that, and I appreciate that.
Thanks, Judy. Yeah, and I'll just add maybe one thing to that, which is I think is that it is important, I think, to keep our minds and hearts open to the excruciating violence and so forth that we're inflicting on animals. I mean, I think it's important not to pretend that's not happening and to feel that the suffering in ourselves of that. But the problem is a lot of us, once we become vegans, we either don't want to deal with that at all or we dwell on it too much. And we start getting very misanthropic and hating humans, and the world is terrible. And we can get to a very dark place because the violence towards animals is huge, and we start to see it everywhere. You know, once we're vegans, we see it in the billboards, we see it in the restaurants, we see it in the supermarkets, everywhere. It's everywhere, and most people don't see it, which makes it much worse. But we do. We become like hypersensitized to it. So I think a good practice is to every day make an effort to also savor the beauty of the animals around us and nature around us, like the birds flying and the little lizards running around and the butterflies and the flowers and the trees. And, you know, try to connect with the beauty and see that, yes, there are animals suffering, that's true, but there's also literally millions of animals celebrating their lives in a beautiful way, and we can enjoy that and contribute to that. Like, that's one of the reasons we love having a garden, and we put a lot of energy into it to bring, you know, so the birds are happy and they're eating our figs too, but that's okay. And, you know, just to try to make a space for all the different creatures. And then, of course, also to spread the word about veganism, to not just be in pain about it, but to turn that pain into action. I think when we turn it into action in some way, writing or speaking or cooking or just sharing with people, then that, because that energy of understanding, if it just kind of doesn't get out, we can get bitter and it can ferment and get pretty bad inside of us. Those are great points. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to add, I sent something to you recently about the difference between compassion and empathy that I happened to see that somebody wrote. I don't know if you got it or not, but they were basically saying that through brain research, they discovered, if this is accurate, that compassion stimulates a different part of the brain than empathy does, and that empathy actually takes us to a darker place, makes us sad because we're feeling what they're feeling, whether it's animal or person or a tree, whereas compassion actually brings us kind of a joy, they were saying, uplifts us. And they talked about in this article I read that by being compassionate, by expanding the compassion in our hearts, we actually can cope with the empathy much better and understand that we have this tremendous power of love to send out to the world through our compassion. And I really liked that article, and it made me think, wow, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And so the more we work on our spiritual lives and expand our compassion, the more love we're bringing to the world. And but we do it because we know what's happening to the animals and have empathy. So it's kind of an interesting.
Yeah, you didn't say what the difference between the two words is, but in that article, I'm not sure if they said, but I think what I think it is that empathy is basically the feeling of the pain of another, and compassion is feeling the pain of another and then yearning to act to relieve the pain of the other, to do something about it. That's like the definition of compassion usually, and I think that's very interesting, because I think that's what we're doing. As vegans, especially as activists, the whole idea is to rescue the animals, right? We know they're suffering, but we want to rescue them, right? We want to create conditions where people don't commit those heinous acts against animals, so either through writing or through speaking or through activism, whatever it is. And it can be through meditation too, right? Mentally creating a field of compassion for other beings. And I think that changes everything, because if to just see the animals there suffering is really different than seeing them and say, okay, I'm going to come and rescue you now. putting the power back in our own court, which is so important, I think. Thanks. Okay, we only have maybe one more minute. Yeah, David, go ahead.
Hey, Will, everybody, thanks so much. And really, I just want to say thank you and express my appreciation and gratitude I've just been thinking a lot about this, that it's very, very difficult for people to comprehend terms like empathy and compassion, and nice words, nice terms, spiritual, or naturopathic. It's what's worse is that people who identify as these things, oh, I'm an empath, I'm very spiritual, it's almost like they're using these words as an excuse to do whatever the hell they want to anybody else, as long as it doesn't affect them. Life is beautiful. Oh, I'm spiritual. I'm on my path. I'm on my journey. But they're using that as carte blanche to, and specifically to use animals whenever, however they feel fit. And so that's an ongoing frustration. But what I want to express appreciation and gratitude for is that you and people here clearly get it. You know, we're getting it. We're actively pursuing it. We're trying to really get a grasp on it, whether we fully do or not, but we want this genuinely, and we're going for it. And we're not just saying, oh, yeah, I'm spiritual, I'll have chicken once in a while, I only eat organic eggs or whatever. So, that's just what was coming up during all of this, and so thank you.
Right. Thanks, David. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's very well said. Mm-hmm. I know, it's these words are easy to throw around. For sure.
Can I share something real quick?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. My name is Don. I just want to say thank you to my sister, Lisa. I needed to be on this call.
Oh, good. Glad you were here.
This is amazing. And I just can't thank her enough, because we don't realize the effect we have. So, Dr. Tuttle, I thank you for this session here. I'm just blown away. My energy was low. But after hearing everyone on this call, I'm going like, oh, my goodness, there's love in this universe. So yes, thank you to everyone.
Yeah, thank you, Don. Appreciate that. Great. So, yeah, it's time to wrap up. I just want to say that we have our third Thursday, which is just the World Peace Diet Group, of course, this later on the third Thursday. And then in October, we'll have our first Thursday. And we're setting up a tour, so we're going to be leaving in our little microvan in early November, probably right around November, like 2nd or something. And you can see it on our website. We're going to be going to Reno first, and then out across Utah. We have a couple of events in Utah, some events in Colorado, some with Judy in Kansas City and Lawrence, and then in Ohio, in Cincinnati, and some other places. And then on the East Coast, Washington, D.C. area, and then going down into North Carolina and so forth, Virginia, and then into Florida around middle of December. And then we'll be at Hippocrates Health Institute again this around from Christmas till about mid-February. So if you know anybody in those areas, we'd love to do some events. I'm a little interested to see how it all goes with this new masking and vaccinating thrust that they're, and we're setting up all these events. So it's going to be really interesting to see the level of awareness that human beings are displaying at this point. So our prayers, I think, always help, and doing whatever we can to spread the message. And also the book, new book called Food for Freedom, we're basically waiting for the book designer to get going so we can get it printed. So it's basically finished, and we're on the next stage. And Madeline's got some beautiful art for the cover. So that's exciting. It's a big book. It's actually a little bit bigger than the World Peace Diet, and there's quite a lot in it. But it's kind of taking it to what we're talking about now with spirituality and also freedom. So anyway, so let's say our closing prayer that we always say together. It's very simple. Madeline's going to join us, it looks like. Sure she is. So you can unmute yourself if you'd like. It's kind of fun to do. It makes a big cacophony of compassion. So let's say it together. We can say it usually three times. Here we go. Compassion circles, everywhere. Good. Okay, again. Compassion circles, everywhere. One more time. Here we go with Compassion. Have a beautiful
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shalom. Thank you. Aloha.